everyone. I'm Phoebe Cohn-Fredos, and I absolutely love my intro. It's so difficult to feel sad or mad or bad when you hear this kind of uplifting music. And I think that all of us, every single day of our lives, we have to figure out what it is that we need that can help us to feel good and joyful and centered. And, you know, the fact is that before I heard the music, I was sitting in my office here on the Upper West Side, feeling a little tired after a very, very tough but wonderful tennis workout with my pro. And it was amazing. The music starts, and now I actually start to feel alive. So for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time, of course, I've been doing the Ask Phoebe show here on the Progressive Radio Network. It is going on to 7 years. It's like, where has the time gone? I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book only for people who are really serious about assessing who is right for you and also who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. It's amazing. The book, it does it for me. It did it as well. It changes the way that we look at relationships forever. It educates, it empowers, and above all, it keeps us safe. I'm also a national speaker, and of course, I've been in national radio and television now for over 25 years, and I have some new news. I am the new advice columnist for Dan's Newspapers. I have an Ask Phoebe column, and it's going to be running to begin with twice a month. And I encourage you, as I have been encouraging you on the show, to write me. I'm really interested in your comments. And of course, I'm also really interested in your questions, because this show is about empowerment, what we need to do, not just about what we need to think or what we need to fantasize about, but what it is that we need to do to really empower ourselves in our life, in our relationships, in our personal relationships, in our business relationships, in our careers. So on the Ask Phoebe Show, we talk about all the things that we can actually do to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. Of course, we naturally talk a lot about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships and how and what, again, we need to do on a daily basis to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite the day-to-day stressors of life. And of course, my mantra, not just as a psychotherapist, but as a sex therapist as well, but just as a woman, my mantra has been for a very, very long time about the importance of acknowledging and addressing and taking whatever steps we need to take with or without help, the things that get in the way are really being able to live a joyful life. In fact, I give my patients the same homework every single time I see them, regardless of what their, in quotes, presenting problem is. And at the end of every session, I want people, as they go through their days and they go through their weeks, to think about one thing and one thing only. And that is, Am I living my life in ways that are in my best interest? And what I'm hoping, of course, is that people are going to pause and is taking that extra drink or that cigarette or that drug or not exercising or engaging in toxic relationships. I want all of us to be really, really mindful about what is good for us and what, on the other hand, is destructive, self-destructive, and self-sabotaging. So people need to be mindful, and they need to be serious then about really being committed to make some positive changes. And again, you know, what I've hoped that I have convinced you over all these years is that we don't need to take this journey on our own. It is way, way, way too difficult. So reaching out to family, of course, that is functional, positive, healthy family, friends, and if need be, professionals to make our life's journey easier and less isolated and alienated and lonely. Because if we're looking at the reality of what is actually going on mental health-wise in our country, let's take a look at depression in the world. And I think these numbers have really gone up in the last couple of years, you know, as a result of the pandemic. The statistics tell us that there are over 350 million people worldwide who are suffering from depression. In the United States, 17 million adults in the United States are suffering from various different kinds of depression. Females experience depression at roughly two times the rate of men, although I oftentimes question that statistic as well. It just may be that we women, we talk about it more, and perhaps we give ourselves permission to get help for depression more. But I have found that whether or not you are a woman or a man, or whether or not you are gay or straight or trans or bi or heterosexual, we are all, on a journey where we're having to deal with depression and anxiety and loneliness and feelings of disconnect. And of course, you know, the real question is that when we're finding ourselves in this kind of a vicious cycle, what are we going to do? So it is the action. It is the positive action that I have tried to really convince you and reinforce is the way to go when we start to feel really, really, off track. If we're looking at anxiety disorders, we're looking at approximately, again, statistically, 40 million Americans who are suffering from anxiety disorders. And if you're looking at statistics, you know, relationship statistics, look at what is going on in the world of domestic violence. And I keep hoping every single year with all these self-help books and the podcasts and the shows on domestic violence and relationships that we are going to see some diminishing statistics. But in fact, we are not seeing that at all. Because if we're looking at domestic violence, for women still are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. If we're looking at divorce, let's look at these statistics. 48% of first marriages end in divorce. 67% of second marriages also end in divorce. And people are somewhat surprised by this third marriage statistic, but that statistic has told us that 73 to 74% of couples marrying for the third time find themselves in front of a judge in a divorce court. So again, what is it that is really going on? And when I give presentations throughout the country and in the city, I have good news. I have really good news that I love to share about what we can again do to find ourselves in healthy and constructive relationships. And I think that it is worthwhile every single week to repeat this. So again, if you are serious about wanting to have a healthy relationship with anyone, there are three things that you need to do. And the first thing, of course, is that each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we have to be willing to deal with our own issues of depression and anxiety and what I call skeletons in our closet, whether or not it is drug abuse, whether or not it is early child sexual abuse. And if we do this, we are then able to really live our lives in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And as I used to tell my daughter Jordana all the time, of course, she became a student. She may not have wanted to be a voluntary student, but she heard her mother talking about relationships all the time. And I really do believe that the relationship needs to be the icing on the cake, and we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to be in a good place. And if we are serious about pivoting and putting ourselves in a better spot, we need to be committed to doing some work. And the work doesn't need to take 1,000 years. But again, it's about really revisiting what did and did not happen in our own childhoods and emotionally working through traumas of various different kinds and in going through that process. And I'm not suggesting for one moment that this is going to be a tea party or a piece of the cake. You're really able to put behind a lot of the issues that continue to get in the way of your life and relationship. For those of you who are listening to me right now, you have to be honest with yourselves. And if you're finding that there are old issues and you may not even know what the issues are that are interfering with your being able to live a joyful life, give yourself permission. You know, you've tried self-help books and you've gone to retreats and you've talked to family and you've talked to friends, but really give yourself permission to find a good therapist who can, you know, hopefully really help you work through some of these things so that you will then be able to just live a more positive and a happier and a more joyful and a healthier life. So again, we need to be okay. And then number two, and this is something I continually talk about, again, despite all the books and the movies and the shows and the retreats about relationships, we need to become students and educate ourselves about what ingredients actually do go into a healthy relationship. And you know what I'm thinking, you know, talking about relationships, it's not just romantic relationships that I'm talking about. We have to be careful who we let into our lives, our friends, our business associates, our bosses, our neighbors. And I have a mantra in my own life, and that mantra is zero toxicity. You know, I was saying to a patient recently, you know, three strikes, you know, I will, you know, maybe not look the other way, but I will be aware of somebody's bad behavior. And if it persists, three strikes and you're out, you know, it works actually very, very well, because we cannot allow people to bring us down and make us feel crazy. And then again, you know, if we're looking at the formula, the third thing, which is based on my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. This formula is very bottom line, and it really takes you through the process of assessing whether or not the person who you think you are madly in love with, and maybe somebody that you think you would like to marry, is really somebody that is good for you. Or on the other hand, it's also very important to find out whether or not this is somebody who you need to get away from as quickly as possible. So again, we have to be mindful, all of us, of living our lives in ways that are in our best interest. And if we are unsure, and a lot of people who contact me for therapy, they're not sure if living their lives in a particular way is actually functional, or whether or not it is destructive or self-destructive. And we all need coaches. And when you look at the professional athletes and you look at the teams, of course, as a former number 10 junior tennis champion in Canada, we didn't have teams. My dad was my coach. But now we can see in the world of sports that it really does take a village, it takes a team to be able to help us in whatever field we're in or whatever endeavor we are wanting to engage in, to help us to be able to maximize our lives and maximize our potentials. So again, it is about making sure that every single day we are being good to ourselves. And of course, Gary Noel talks all the time about the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains and fish. And it is so easy. It is so easy to get off course and make a lot of excuses why we're going to have that extra pie and why we're going to have that extra sugar. So again, it is being mindful. Is this something that is good for me? And of course, we also need to be very mindful of the importance of interaction and socialization. And it's a really good thing that things are starting to open up. I have to confess, I mean, I'm still seeing 99% of my patients on Zoom, and I have not yet socialized. I'm still waiting to see, you know, the best way to go about really getting back into the social scene. I want to be, you know, somebody that is mindful and not behave in ways that are really rash. Of course, also the importance of sleep. And I think about people in Sardinia who take naps. And of course, exercise. How important is exercise in our lives? Weight training and yoga and meditation and massage. And again, the real importance of having supportive people in our lives. And that means eliminating toxins, including toxic people. And that sometimes means family and friends. I'm going to need to take a very, very short little break. We'll be back in about 30 seconds. Okay, everybody, I am back. And it is so interesting that before I do every single show or before I give a talk, I always have a bottle of water. And before the show today, I didn't feel that I needed my water. So the results, of course, were I started to cough. I have my water, and we are now going to be able to continue on with the show. And I am very, very pleased today to have a guest, Paula Jennings. And Paula and I have not yet met in person. But I have heard amazing things about Paula. She describes herself as a multifaceted visionary thought leader who has traveled many paths on the way to becoming, in quote, my true self. Now, Paula was in Wall Street in major positions for over 25 years. And I'm really curious, of course, to find out why she decided to leave a very, very significant career on Wall Street. And she says that it was to inspire others to create a balanced, joyful, and purposeful life. And Paula is the founder of Enam, which is the Gaelic for soul evolution. And Paula, I'm so glad to welcome you to the Ask Beattie Show.
Thank you, Beattie. You are such an inspiration. You are like,
sound like you're a real inspiration as well, Paula. And I am so interested, and I know that my listeners are very, very interested in hearing about your journey. You were from Ireland. You came to the United States. So tell us, how did all this happen? Why did you leave Ireland? How did you get to the United States? Why did you end up on Wall Street? And why the pivot in the last few years into an entirely different world of metamorphosis and looking, you know, to become your true self? So I am going to just let you talk and tell us about your journey.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's been quite a journey. I feel like I've had several lives in this short one life so far. I call myself the Phoenix. But I was in my 20s, I suffered from depression and some mental illness. And I had a very loving family who got me through that. And at the end of that decade of life, I got a very strong calling, I'd like to say, urge to travel to the United States. So I decided, I basically sold up everything I had. I got a one-way ticket and a suitcase and about $500 in my pocket. And I decided to get on the plane and come to live with my friend who was living at Queens at the time. And I really had no idea what I was going to do, but I knew that I was in the right place. And I knew that this was going to be the next chapter of my life. And so I always say the goddess in the form of my mother called me up and she offered me, or she told me that there was an advertisement in the Irish Times about a company who were looking for people with finance backgrounds. I did have an MA and a BA in economics and finance. And so she said, why don't you give them a call? So I did. And it turns out it was a recruitment agency, an international recruitment agency. And the fellow was really nice. We got on very well. And he sent me on my first interview. I had tried to get interviews on Wall Street before this, but I kept on getting the message that if I didn't have Wall Street experience, there was no way I was going to break down that barrier. So off I went to my first and thankfully only interview at that time. And I went to a company called Bankers Trust. And Bankers Trust was a boutique U.S. investment firm. And they were dealing in something called derivatives, which is quite a new and sexy product at the time. Of course, I had no clue what even a derivative was, but I headed off to the interview and was very kindly met by a gentleman who saw my potential and decided to hire me. So he hired me, and I guess the rest of that is history. I spent the next 25 years on Wall Street. And I went from being, he hired me as a consultant. At the time, I was taken in by this family who really, really did care for me. We're working on Latin American derivatives, working with Japanese clients, selling sovereign debt to Japanese clients. And the sovereign debt was Latin American. So I had this huge exposure all of a sudden to many different cultures and many different ways of being. And I really found myself just like pinching myself saying, this is like a movie. I can't believe that this actually has happened. I was kind of a nervous, shy young lady. I was 30. I wasn't that young, but I did have a stutter. And so I had a few obstacles I needed to overcome. And honestly, being pushed into that container, that place where I kind of had to step it up or not, really helped me develop confidence and develop, I guess, it helped me to claim what I felt was mine when I left college, and then things had gone south in my 20s. So I started to feel independent, and I started to feel like I was the author of my own life. And
I have two questions
yes.
at this point.
Yes.
Were your parents supportive of your leaving Ireland and coming to America and beginning an entirely different life?
That's a good question. So my mother was very supportive. My father said, over my dead body. yes, because he was a little worried about me. I think he was a little worried I would end up in some trouble or something would happen. So, but my mother was very supportive, and she understood, and she saw what, I think she understood that I needed to leave in order to kind of start my life. And so she was really supportive in convincing him that it was the right thing to do. And he, in the end, of course, I received his blessing. I would not have left it without it. And he drove me to the airport and we cried the whole way.
Uh-huh.
So at least
in the end, they went along and supported their daughter's really huge, huge adventure. The other thing I was wondering, 25 years on Wall Street, what was it like
yeah.
for you? Did you love it? Did you feel that you were in the right place? I mean, look at what's happened in the last few years. I mean, you've gone in an entirely different direction. So tell us about the 25 years and what it was like for you professionally and also personally.
Sure. That's a very, there's lots of parts to this question, but let me break it down. So I'll break it down in terms of like maybe the timing. So the first, I would say the first 5 years were really exciting. I had disposable income, more disposable income than I ever had in my whole life. So I was working, you know, breakfast, dinner, and lunch with the team. We were literally like a family. We went through many crazy events, like the Mexican peso devalued, and we had the Russian, Russian crisis. So it was really exciting. It was like nothing I ever had experienced before. And I loved it. Actually, I would say even more, even probably longer. I really enjoyed immersing myself into learning something new. And the people aspect of it was always very important. Now, I was in a support role. So I was doing the trade. I was doing the risk P&L, basically trade. The trader did the trade all the way to the time that the client would close on it. We call it cradle to grave processing. I was responsible for all of that. And so I'm a natural supporter. I think it's kind of was part of who I was in those days. So it felt very comfortable to do that. And I always threw myself into everything that I've done. It's just who I am as well. I'm a little bit obsessive when I'm doing something, I'm full in. So it really was a wonderfully supportive environment and it was different than I expected it to be, because we hear of all these stories. I didn't, especially in the early days, Bankers Trust, and then a company, the company that I worked for, the guys took me over to work with them to another company called Donaldson, Luffin, Jenrette, which again, the atmosphere there was extremely supportive, very like family. And I would have been there forever if it had not been that we were bought over by a large European investment bank. And that was a transition for me. Around the same time also, so in the beginning I was young, free and single. And again, having that disposable income and being able to experience the joys of New York City plus travel in the United States and outside was a wonderful freedom for me. And then also to be able to go home to Ireland and be like Santa Claus, bringing everybody home gifts, that also felt very, very good. And so
let me ask you this. During all of these adventures, your depression was in a good enough place where it was not interfering with your life, your work life, your social life?
No, I think I was probably very blessed. I really feel like, and my mother, you know, I really feel like I had somewhat of a miraculous healing. Like I really feel that I came out of that period of my life with it sort of resolved that I was not going to go back there again. And I won't say that I haven't gone back there again, but in those years, no, it didn't raise its head. I was very, I guess maybe immersed in my work and doing what I loved. And there wasn't, I didn't experience it at all. I really had no... no depression whatsoever. I just felt like it was an upward spiral of gaining confidence and feeling good. I mean, I took care of myself as well. I had the time I was able to join a gym and do what I needed to do to keep myself healthy. And I had a reasonably good regime during that time as well. So I think that also helped.
So it sounds like, those 25 years were pretty terrific. You know, I have treated a number of people who've worked on Wall Street who have such different stories to tell. They didn't experience the joys. There may have been the highs. There may have been, making, a lot of money at different times. But for you, it sounds like it was a really, really good time. And that's why I'm so curious. What changed? Why did you want to change? And then, of course, you've gone into an arena that is 360 degrees different from your Wall Street money, life. So what happened?
So I would say probably 10, I don't know whether it was 10 years into, I can't remember how many years, but I decided that I wanted to get married and have a family. And I was in therapy at that time because I think the main thing if I was worried was about meeting my bright partner. And so I did the Christmas Eve of, or New Year's Eve of 99 going into 2000, actually 98 going into 99, I met the man I was to marry. And I think what happened and I continued to work the way that I was working, and that started to be more and more difficult and more and more challenging as I decided that I was going to have a baby and all of those things. So the shift for me came when this larger company bought us out, and I moved over, and all of a sudden I wasn't in the same kind of environment where I felt supported. I was a much smaller fish in a larger, pool, if you like. And I didn't feel supported through my pregnancy. I had some really difficult times around even just the flexibility to be able to pump when I got back into work after being on maternity leave. Also around that time, 9/11 happened, and also my father passed away 6 months after my son was born. And I think all of those things, and plus mounting pressure, I think he's my husband now, but he was also trying to buy a business. We were trying to buy a business together. And it's almost like we took a lot, probably too much on, and we became more and more disconnected. I started to use work almost like an addiction. Like that was my place where I kind of, wouldn't express myself in the relationship, and I would find my solace in work. And so while it was good for the first several years, I think then it started to really become something that wasn't so supportive to me. And I was also in a marriage that was difficult, and the pressure of having the first child and then the second child after we moved to Long Island just kept on mounting. And so I continued to progress. My career continued to do really well. I was the main breadwinner in the family, and I was supporting us, and I felt a lot of pressure from that as well. But I felt very much that my voice at home was not heard. I did not express myself. I didn't express what I wanted the way that I wanted to, and that started to take its toll on me. I mean, part of it was that I really wanted to spend a little bit more time with the children at home, but financially, I didn't recognize that I had a choice. I kind of felt that I was a bit of a victim, to be honest with you, thinking that I was stuck in this situation and it was up to me. I was became a victim and a martyr. And so then everything in my life, of course, started to suffer because I wasn't feeling good about myself anymore.
What's so interesting, Paula, is that I hear this from so many high-level executive women that at work, they're in control. They are communicative. They ask for what they want. Yeah. And then something happens when they walk into their apartments or they walk into their houses in terms of their interactions with their significant others. You know, we're going to need to do a lot better as women. I mean, I hear this story, you know, day in and day out, hour in and hour out, where you have these women who, you know, like yourself, very successful, you know, in the workplace, and yet at home, just as you're saying, you know, not asking for what you want, not realizing that you have choices, almost choosing in certain ways to be victimized, maybe not on a conscious level, of course, but a real difference, right? Terms of like the behavior at work and the behavior at home.
Exactly. It was like two different people. It really was. I was this empowered, badass woman at work who people respected and revered, and I was an advocate for women, and you know, I was that voice, that female senior voice at the table. And at home, if people had believed, people would not have believed what I had put up with and what I accepted.
let me ask you this, and this may be too personal a question, especially since you know we're on the radio here. But was your relationship an abusive relationship? I mean, was the shift or the lack of shift due to the fact that you lived in fear, or at least some of the time?
Yeah. Yes, I would say it was a verbally abusive relationship, perhaps, you know, manipulation, verbally abusive. I wasn't treated well. I wasn't treated the way that a woman should be treated.
Mm-hmm. How many years did it take you to realize that you were not being treated well, and much more importantly, that you needed to stand up and begin to, you know, if you heard the beginning of the show, begin to do what was really in your best interest and be able to stay and stand up and say enough is enough?
Well, that process started about 2012. So I don't know how many years ago that is, but I do remember actually what was interesting. The company I worked for at the time sent me on a leadership program to INSEAD outside. We were in this beautiful place outside Paris. It was like a retreat center, if you like, and we were there. And I just came apart. This is so interesting. A woman, we had coaches, and it was a leadership women's program by women for women, led by this incredible woman, Erminia Ibarra. She's written a couple of books. She's phenomenal. And we each had a coach. And the coach that I had, we were going through, you know, my work life. And then she asked me to draw a picture of myself. And she asked me to include my head, my heart, my future, and my past. In the process of doing that, I completely broke down into tears, and it hit me like a ton of bricks that if I continued doing what I was doing, I would never have the future that I dreamed of, and that I was out of integrity with who I am, and that I didn't actually, I had lost sight of who I am, and I had gone so far out of alignment for my truth that it just hit me. And I guess because I was in this environment that was away from my home, it was closer to my family in Ireland, and I called my sister, and that was the first time that I told my sister what was going on in the relationship, because I had kept it hidden. And that's the other thing, I kept everything hidden, was carrying it around like a bag of, you know, weight on my shoulders, and I didn't even realize how miserable I was, Beattie. And so that was when I made a decision that I was going to stand up for myself, and I was going to just, you know, try to at least talk to him about what I wanted. I did go see a therapist, and the therapist basically said to me immediately, I think after two visits, he told me to go home and tell him that I was going to divorce him if things didn't change.
And did you? And did you? So
I
you
did.
Had enough. Enough was enough. You got to a place where you valued yourself more than continuing to remain in a very dysfunctional, unhappy, and verbally abusive. I mean, look, verbal abuse is abuse. I mean, it's a horrible way to live. So that was that. So did you file for divorce?
So I told him this, and then he was willing to go to therapy. He went to therapy. Things started to get, you know, stabilized, I guess. And we were at the time, we had bought a business together, and we were going through all that. So I think it took me another, and the kids were young, and I was, you know, I come from countries that doesn't even have divorce, and not until recently. So it did take me a while. And actually, when I look back, I realized that that time was so vital for me to get myself back on track, for me to build up the relationships that I needed to in, you know, like the support network, because I had also let all my friends go. I was very isolated. So I used the time to get myself on my feet. And then I gave, and then I also partook in a transformation program called, well, they're called All True now, the All True New York City. And I had great support there in moving forward with what I knew to be in the best interest of everybody involved. And I did it slowly. I don't believe that, you know, at that point we were probably married 18 years. And so my thing was, my children come first. I want to do this in a way that I had this vision that post-divorce, our family would be more intact and we'd have each other's back and everybody would be more functional than they were now. And that's really how I thought about it. And that's what kept me going every day, to know, because I knew that's something that could happen. And so I'm happy to say, I think we divorced finally. We signed the papers in 2017. We separated, mediated, and it was very smooth. Probably about 2 or 3 years before that, he was on my medical insurance, so I kept him on. And then came the time that we divorced. And so it was a slow uncoupling. It was definitely conscious, and it was definitely bearing in mind that we had 2 children who, you know, I wanted to be there to support. You know, the other thing I did, which is probably people would say you were totally crazy, but I knew that I was done on Wall Street at that point. I knew that I needed to be home with my kids to get them through this and to figure out what I wanted to do. I had a very strong sense that I wanted to go into empowering women and coaching women based off of my own experience. And so that's what I did. I actually, an opportunity came up for me. Well, it's a whole sequence of events, but I was able to leave Deutsche Bank, and I did. And that's really, yeah. So I made 2 big changes within a very short space of time, which again, probably from, if I were to go back and do it again, I might not have done them so close together, because there was a lot of instability that created, but it also created a great opportunity for me to continue to transform and to look at the behaviors and to shed my old self, you know, to shed this person that was not confident or that didn't believe in herself or thought that she deserved that.
Well, I mean, there is nothing that will stop us from thriving more than being in a dysfunctional, unhappy, abusive, yeah, you know, relationship. I mean, that'll do us in every mm-hmm. single time. And then that, coupled with what you were saying with a lack of support and a lack of connection, and people are so frequently, they're embarrassed to really talk about what yes. is really going on in their lives, which is mm-hmm. why the need for close friendships, and if you're lucky enough yeah. to have close family, I mean, that mm-hmm. makes all the difference in the world, because it's way too difficult on all levels to be able to navigate life's journey, you know, on our own, particularly, you know, when there are the typical, you know, ups and downs. So you founded ANAM, which, you know, yeah, the Gaelic for soul evolution. So yes. How did that happen? You left Wall Street, you decided that you were going to move in an entirely different direction. And I yes. want people listening to really learn about ANAM. So take us okay. through the various different programs. I'm looking at some of the information here. Kundalini yoga, which I know absolutely nothing about, the energy and sound medicine, the yes. metamorphosis. So take us mm-hmm. through, you know, the different options, the different programs, if you call them programs, sure. that people would then be able to engage in with you through ANAM.
Okay, thank you. Yes, so ANAM also has been an evolution for me. And, it, you know, I was not an entrepreneur. And I learned also very quickly that being an entrepreneur is a whole other ballgame than receiving a paycheck and a bonus every year. So I've had great growth through that. And so where I am, and it has morphed, and it has morphed and morphed. And where I'm at now is that I have gotten clearer and clearer and clearer as the years have gone by, you know, who I'm here to support, who I'm here to empower and guide. And that's definitely divorced women with teens. So that's my specialty. So women who are divorced, who have teens, because that was my story. I had my children later in life. What am I here for as we're raising our teens? So that's really who I'm supporting. I have a program that is 4 weeks long, at least to start with, just for people to get to know me. And it really is to have to bring together women who are through the divorce process. So they're already through it, but they're exhausted because this is what happened to me. And then they're finding that I thought that everything was kind of click into gear, but it didn't. I needed time. I needed time to, right, again, get in contact with those unexpressed emotions. I needed time to process probably years old anger that was, you know, living deep in the cells of my body. I found some incredible technologies and tools, Kundalini yoga being one of them, which is so effective at not only supporting us from a hormonal endocrine system, our glandular system, but on another level, it really helps you to process trauma. So I processed a lot of the trauma in my life, including the marriage trauma. And I also was introduced to energy work. And I guess I realized that I had this gift of being able to work with energy and move it. And sometimes, you know, you're working with the individual from a talk perspective and their overall well-being. And sometimes what's really good when you're doing that is also to work on an energetic level. Everything starts, we are, of course, vibration. And I really learned about why it is that I suffered from the depression myself, and how it is that we can raise our own vibration through a lot of the things that you spoke about at the top of the call, you know, the basics in terms of taking self-care, and also getting support in order to be able to release energetically stuff that's stored deep. And I believe that some of this stuff is even 7 generations old. We can store in our bodies. You know, we come here with a lineage, you know, on our maternal line of quite a bit of stuff. And so what I recognized was that I wasn't just shifting my own, my belief system came from my maternal line, And I recognized that it was important for me also to get to the belief system and to understand who my ancestors were, so that then I could work and to clear thoughts that were not mine, really, you know, beliefs about myself that were not truly, you know, the essence of who I am.
So people who contact you, do you do an assessment as I do? And then you say, well, I think that energy and sound medicine would be the way that we should begin? Or perhaps you might say that the Kundalini yoga is, you know, maybe what's best for you at this point. How do you go about assessing what will be best for each person?
Mm-hmm. So it's a combination. I do have a fairly detailed assessment form that I have people fill in, and then I will sit with them and we'll create a bespoke program custom to them based off of also, I allow the client to lead too in terms of their preferences. So, you know, some people are not interested in meditation at all. Other people are interested in other types of ways of, you know, calming down the nervous system. So I will kind of work with them and we'll come up with a program. That program can be either 6 sessions or 12 sessions, whatever it might be, and there may be more than that afterwards. But it's really coactive in terms of the combination of the coaching, because I also did certified coaching from Columbia University, and I also did some other coaching programs. And so I'll combine the two. If the person isn't interested in talking it out, or if they're really just looking to use energy because maybe they have a therapist, and I always say that this work works best when you are complementing it with other therapies.
Right.
And so some of it is, so it's based off of the assessment, my conversation with them. I'll usually have a strategy session to begin our work together to see if it's a fit, because not everybody is a fit, obviously. And then we will take it from there. And I'll come up with a program and they'll be happy with, they'll, you know, sign off on that. And then that's what we'll start with. It's usually a combination. These days it's virtual. Some people prefer phone. Some people prefer Zoom. I'll do anything from breath work to meditation to straight coaching. It's really up to the client as well. I like to have them be a participant in the choices of what we're going to use.
Now, this is an individual, so this is an individualized program. I was wondering whether or not, you know, particularly since, you know, the women are divorced and have kids, and it's also at times overwhelming, whether or not there is a group dynamic format also that you use.
I do. So I've just started, I just launched a group starting in October, and it's a group of, it's my first time doing a group together, and it will be I have done a lot of group work, but not with this set. And so it's going to be a 4-week program. I'm hoping for 10 women, and it will be, I would like to create that supportive environment, because I do think that that's an important element, and to work through the group dynamics as well, the energy of the group.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds absolutely fascinating. And so it's after, say, 4 sessions or 6 sessions, might somebody pivot from energy and sound medicine to yoga? I mean, is it a combination of a variety of different techniques and schools of thought that you incorporate into your program?
There is a variety. It's basically, yes, Western and Eastern. And I will, usually I will introduce the movement a little bit later. Usually what we'll focus on is breath work, because breath work is the best way to get you to connect back into your life force. So a lot of what I do is about, we all have a vibrancy inside of us, right? We all have that life force, that willingness to live, that wanting to fulfill our potential. And so the first part for me is shifting and getting back connected with life, getting back connected with what it is, feeling passionate, moving past your grief. And I tend to move forward more than back, if that makes sense, although obviously in the process, in the process, there's always stuff that will come up that's related because, you know, the nature of the timeline, et cetera. And so I also teach yoga separately, so people can come to my clients can come to my classes as well. I offer that. And then I will teach, Kundalini is a very precise yoga based off of sacred geometry, based off of this very intentional that we call them kriyas, and kriyas are a set of asanas or movements with a specific results in mind. So it could be the kriya for lifting depression, it could be a kriya for balancing the time, you know, balance for rebalancing your immunity system. Depending on what comes up, I will work with that. And if the person's open, not everybody is open to the yoga piece, which is fine. It's just, and actually more and more people that are coming to me, because I think I've gotten clearer about what I'm offering, are open. And so that's the direction I'm going. I'm combining all the different pieces, the energy, the sound. The sound I can do remotely, but I also love to do it in person when that works. So it's really a combination.
No, it sounds fascinating. You know, I'm looking at the clock. I can't even believe that an hour is almost coming. Gone. How can people reach you, Paula Jennings? What is the best way to be able to reach out to you and find out more about you and find out more about your various different programs?
Thank you, Beatty. So you can reach directly paula@paulajennings.com is my email. My website is paulajennings.com, so very simple. And, you know, Instagram, social media is all, I think on Instagram I'm Heart and Soul Guide, but you'll find me if you search for Paula Jennings, and Facebook I'm Paula Jennings. So any of those routes. The most direct route is to email me at paula@paulajennings.com.
Okay, that's great. And of course, there is going to be a recording of our interview on the Progressive Radio Network website, you know, on the Ask Beattie Show. Well, listen, Paula, it was an absolute pleasure to speak with you, and I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person. And again, thank you so much. And I'm just going to read a quote here that you sent me, which I really, really love. And people should really take this in. It's the times I've had my face in the sand that I've learned more about myself and life than the times I've celebrated the material victories. So, so, so true. So again, Paula, thank you so much. Have a really great rest of the day. And again, I look forward to meeting you very soon. Take care.
Thank you, Beattie. Have a great day. Thank you.
You too. Interesting. Bye-bye. Interesting woman. Well, everybody, it is amazing how quickly time goes when you're having, you know, fascinating and interesting kinds of conversations. And I want to thank you again so much for listening every single week to the Ask Beattie Show. And of course, you can always email me with questions and comments. And I want to leave you with my two weekly, I guess, mantras, messages that I'm really hoping that you're going to take in. And the first one, whether or not you are going to do energy or sound medicine or yoga or psychotherapy, I want you to be very, very mindful every day of whatever it is that you're doing and with whomever it is that you are interacting, that you are living your life in ways that are truly in your best interest. So it's a test that I'm giving you, which is the same test that I give my patients every single time that they come in to see me for therapy. And of course, the second message, and we have to really think about this very seriously as well, is that we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to accept each other, understand each other, empathize with each other, and love each other. So again, thank you so much for tuning in every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show, here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I hope you have a really wonderful, wonderful, wonderful rest of the day. And I will talk with you next week. So take care, be well, love yourself, and let's love each other. Bye-bye, everybody.